This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com.
These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Edge of Sports podcast. I'm Dave Zirin, brought to you by The Nation magazine, of course. Look, if you know me, you know two things. One, I like my politics with my sports. I like sports as a platform to speak out about the injustices in the world. But you also know if there's any time of the year I try to give my brain a break from the politics. Certainly not easy these days. But the NBA playoff season is my favorite time in the sports calendar. 40 days, 40 nights. And unlike the regular season, every player in these playoffs, they feel the stakes. They play hard and they know that they could be a breakout star in the playoffs. There are very few players who wouldn't benefit from being a breakout star in these playoffs. Frankly, you can count them on one hand. But everybody else, other than your LeBrons and your Jokic's, people who've already proven it on the biggest stage, Steph Curry, to me, I think honestly, that's where the list ends. Anybody can really be a kind of a breakout. Jason Tatum, put him there too, Jaylen Brown. But the breakout star aspect is so exciting about these playoffs. Everybody's got a shot to be looked at differently because of these playoffs. And so I want to talk about each game, but first I want to warm up with a couple of questions. So you might ask, who am I asking these questions of? Who else? The basketball savant, Arya Shirazi. So excited to talk to him about these NBA playoffs. Arya, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good, Dave. I promise that I'll try not to be too political in my remarks.
Please. Although praise for Steve Kerr is so always welcome in these parts. Son of Dr. Malcolm Kerr, great man. Middle Eastern studies, the whole like. Okay, moving on. I already blew what I was going to do. So Shiraz, just a couple of questions. To me, there are two questions which hang over the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference. And like almost like a shadow over these playoffs, or a subplot that we have to confront before we start going through series that perhaps might even be irrelevant to what happens in the end. And so here's the first question. Oklahoma City, the Thunder, a team you were down on before the start of the season, won 68 games. They have the probable MVP in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and they set an NBA record for point differential this year. And they did it without one of their three best players, Chet Holmgren, on the court for much of the season, which is amazing. So the question I ask of thee is Oklahoma City inevitable? And if they go to the finals, will we look back and say, why didn't we just see them as inevitable given this regular season?
Well, I was down on them before the season started relative to where everybody thought they would be. I did not think they would be a mediocre team. I thought they would be an above average team. Just I did not think they would be the class of the Western Conference like most of the people who talk and write about basketball seem to. And I'd venture to say the Thunder had a better year than their biggest supporters thought they would have. They had such a dominant season. And this is a team that has baffled and bewildered me for this entire year. I still, as they won six, everything you just said, which are crazy or record-breaking team stats that work in their favor, that speak towards why they won 68 games, besides just having the probable most valuable player. Whatever I would have thought, whatever counter ideas I had about the Thunder were wrong. They never went on a lull. They never let their guard down. So it would make sense. I mean, I would think that they would probably be the favorite to win the championship. No reason. You can always say, well, they haven't done it before.
That's the number one knock on
them. But I mean, most teams, it's their first time. You can say that last year's Celtics were driven by the championship experience of Jrue Holiday. And that would be a nice thing to say, and it would probably be wrong.
Or their loss to Golden State, though, and their years deep in the playoffs. That is the knock on OKC. Only 1 year getting to the second round and then losing to an arguably inferior Dallas team. Arguably.
Very true. Very true. I mean, if they're following a historical progression, then maybe this year they make it to the conference finals. And the answer to your original question is, in my mind, it is certainly not inevitable that the Oklahoma City Thunder will win the West. And a bit of a spoiler is that I don't believe that they'll be representing the West in the finals. So to me, it is far from inevitable.
Yeah. And I'll do a spoiler and say I don't see them coming out of the West either. As we'll get to, but at the same time, I do want to say, because I experienced this last year with Boston, where they had this amazing regular season, and I joined a chorus of people pointing out why they wouldn't make the finals, and then they go on this, or if they did, they'd lose, and then they go on this amazing run. I think they went 16-3 in the playoffs, and then when it was over, it was kind of like, oh, yeah. They were great all year. Why wouldn't they do a run like this? I can at least see a world where that happens with OKC. They were just too good in the regular season for me to disregard that possibility. And that being said, I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, again, I think that if people consider the Thunder the favorites to win the West and win the championship, that makes a lot of sense. And there's a very good chance that at the end of the year, they'll be shoving it up my ass just like the Celtics did last year.
Hey-o! Ari got suppositoried by the Celtics last year. That's the truth. Moving on. All right, so the other inevitability that hangs over these playoffs like a bit of a shadow. And when I keep saying a shadow, that doesn't mean I'm not looking forward to it or there's any dread. You know, words that shadow actually means, so maybe I need a better word. I mean more that we can talk, you know, ourselves blue in the face about Western Conference matchups and it'll still be OKC in the finals. That's the shadow. We can talk our asses off about the East, and yet everybody and their mama says, Celts, Cavs, inevitable in the conference finals. And with that, I think leading to a lot more debate, fun debate, as to which team will actually win that. But do you see it as an inevitability that we're looking at a Celts-Cavs Eastern Conference Finals?
A probability.
Not an inevitability.
Not inevitable. I think there's enough in the Knicks and the Bucks, despite what they showed against those two better teams in the regular season, where neither team could really beat the Cavs or the Celtics, kind of showed that they were for sure the top two.
The Knicks 0-8 against those two teams.
I think that I'm exactly, and the Bucks couldn't beat the Knicks. So, I mean, in a way, there has been a much more clear hierarchy that has sustained in the East, making it, again, I think, a less interesting conference to think about, at least in the early rounds of the playoffs, because it does seem more set. Not inevitable, as I said. I think that... if Lillard is able to play and he's Lillard, and I see that he's kind of being cleared, I think he's going to miss game one against the Pacers, but he might play against Indiana. That would be great.
Sure looking that way.
I absolutely hope he does. Love Lillard and want the best players to be on the floor in the postseason. I think there is a chance that the Knicks and Bucks, should they make it to the second round, could be surging at the right time and have the players that it would not be a shock if they pulled an upset. That being said, I believe it's going to be Cavaliers and Celtics.
Yeah, and it's so funny because we'll get to this, of course, but I want to start with the West because it's more interesting. But let me just throw... Or should we do the West second to let people wait? No. This is podcast land. Let's start with the West and then understand that people will probably turn it off before we get to the East. But as you say that, it's so funny you say that because I think the team most likely to crash the party of Cavs Celts is Indiana, which has been playing out of its mind. And then that being said, I can totally see the Bucks with Dame back beating Indiana. So I'm very confused that particular series, with hearing that Dame coming back, has really changed my thinking about it, because Giannis has been playing out of his damn mind. And if Lillard is playoff Lillard, then they have the two best players in the series, and you just can't disregard that. But the Indiana, man, has been playing so well, and they're so deep. And that's the opposite of what the Bucks are. But we'll talk about that. Sorry. All right.
I think it's sometimes not spoken of enough or not thought of enough by me that the Bucks have the best player in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah. By a decent margin, too.
And, it's kind of common agreement that the NBA is a superstars league. And in most cases, the superstars and the 1% superstars are what drive championships, and the Bucks have that.
Screw it. We're doing the East first. We're too in on this. That being said, though, Shiraz, for everything you're saying, I can see Giannis doing 35, 10, and 10 because he's been an assist maestro since Lillard has been out. So impressive. His passing got 20 assists in a game, for God's sakes. Even with all of that, even with Bobby Portis coming back, I got to tell you, the Kyle Kuzma jinx is real, even though I guess he won a title, so you can't call it a full jinx. But watching him in D.C. for so long, I'm not picking a team with Kyle Kuzma. And I do think the Pacers have the best chance to crash the party. Halliburton finally looks like the Halliburton of a couple years ago. Pascal Siakam is a very underrated playoff performer. Second best player on that Toronto team that won a title. Played great in that series. Played great against the Knicks last year. They have a couple wild cards like Jarius Walker, like players on the bench who can impress. And I got to say, when someone like Mathurin is like your, what, fifth best player? I mean, that's pretty damn good. And lastly, the Bucks have said explicitly that they are depending on Kevin Porter Jr. to play well to win this series. That's grim to me. I like the Pacers in seven, even with Giannis having an insane series. I'm going to stick with that, even though I hate the Pacers and love the Bucks, so I'll be in a position of rooting for the team that I'm not picking.
This was a very strange year in the NBA, which has been chronicled.
Mm-hmm.
This was a weird year that kind of, it was a cloudy season as opposed to being a truly joyous season. But one that went by very quickly to me. And I say that because it seems fairly recent that you and I were talking about last year's playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are again. So in a way, this weirdo season kind of flew by to its credit. Mm-hmm. And I find myself again, we find ourselves looking at a Pacers-Bucks first round series where the Pacers go in playing better basketball, where one of the Bucks' two superstars is down at least for the very, very short term.
And hasn't exercised on doctor's orders for 6 weeks.
Yep.
I found that very interesting.
And the difference this year being that Indiana even has home court.
Great.
And last year, against all of that kind of rational reason, I chose Milwaukee to win, and they did not. And this year, against similar or even enhanced rational reason, I'm picking the Bucks.
How many games?
And it is going to be an uphill battle for what we have been talking about.
How many games?
I'm gonna go Bucks in seven.
Okay, cool.
I'm gonna say they're gonna win on the road.
I can see it.
And you stressing the importance of Kevin Porter in this series speaks volumes to war in the Pacers' favor even more.
No depth.
I wouldn't want to be relying with the ball in Kevin Porter's hands. But you know, I did not live the Kuzma experience in DC, so I've not been traumatized for him, and I actually think that he was a outstanding acquisition for Milwaukee for the role he's playing. He's in the much more appropriate position of being the fourth option and a crucial defensive piece on what is now the longest front court in the entire league, which I think is going to prove pivotal in the playoffs, particularly against Indiana's perimeter players. So I actually think that Kuzma, outside of perhaps, you know, negative energy, I don't think that he's a minus for the Bucks. It's going to be a super, super tight series. A lot is going to depend on Lillard's availability and fitness, but I'm going to go Milwaukee in seven.
Okay. Let's go with the only other Eastern Conference series that I find at all interesting. And that's Knicks Pistons. Do you want to go first on this one since I went first last time?
Yeah, I'll go first I like the Pistons at the beginning of the year. I like them to make a tangible jump from being absolutely horrid. I did not expect them to wind up six.
Triple their wins from last year.
They had everything I kind of liked about their roster construction actually came true. That roster worked together in the way that I thought those kind of unusual pieces, mix of young potential stars and veterans really did work well together. Monty Williams had been checked out. J.B. Bickerstaff certainly was not. I think that he should be in the Coach of the Year conversation for what he's done in Detroit. And what really solidified their arrival as a solid team was that, you know, right around midseason, I think they lost Jaden Ivey to a season-ending broken leg. He and Cunningham, that backcourt was working. He was legitimately their second-best player. And that's the kind of move that can cause a team to plummet in the standings. It went the other way. They made the not so flashy move of bringing in Dennis Schroeder at the trade deadline, and he was the perfect player to add to play in the backcourt with Cunningham. So Detroit is playing really good ball, held off the Bucks. We're beaten by the Bucks for the five. So they'll be going against the Knicks. The Knicks should win the series. I think the Knicks will win the series. But I'm going to pick Knicks in six. And if they win in five, then I'm sure there'll be a few games that will be one possession games in the last couple of minutes.
Yeah,
so
I like
that.
I think
the Knicks will emerge, but I do not think that they drew a cupcake opponent.
No, I mean, I like the Knicks in five, but I also see it as kind of a brutal series. I mean, we all know that these Pistons adopt a kind of bad boy 2.0 mentality. Isaiah Stewart, a.k.a. Beef Stew, Ron Holland, the rookie, Durin, who's a very exciting player at the center position in terms of his athleticism. I mean, and then Cade Cunningham, who has dominated the Knicks in four games this year that the Pistons won 3-1. All of that being said, I do go the Knicks in five for two reasons. Everybody knows the Pistons have great depth, but everybody knows that in the playoffs, that depth means less and less as you play fewer and fewer players. And also, let's remember the first round are those mammoth rests between games. And so that allows that Knicks, you know, five-man or six-man lineup that plays 40-plus minutes a game each, that'll give them the rest to do it. I have Knicks concerns. We don't talk nearly enough that defensive ace Mikal Bridges was actually pretty awful this year defensively. Under-discussed to me, I think. But his offense did pick up when Brunson came out. But I just, you know, there are questions about Cat as a playoff performer. And frankly, Cat as somebody who someone like Beef Stew might hit with a couple of forearm shivers in the series to try to get him off his game. Beef Stew has never been afraid to get ejected. And if you get Cat ejected, then that's like cutting a vein on the Knicks. But at the same time, we also know that the Knicks are Jalen Brunson's personality. Ice cold in the playoffs. They've been here before, two straight years going into this year. This is one of those situations like the Pacers-Bucks where you really gotta tip your hat a little bit on the experience question to me. And because the Pacers, I think, coming off that incredible series is from last year, that run is going to do them good favors. But the other issue, I want to call it, I'll just end with this, is five-man depth. I love the Knicks starting five. It's one of the best. The Bucks don't even have a starting five when you talk about their depth. It's not an impressive starting five, and that to me is what hurts them against a deep team like the Pacers, because then the Pacers can just throw bodies over and over again, fresh bodies, particularly at an out-of-shape Dame Lillard. So I like the Knicks in this in five. I like Cade to go off because why wouldn't he? But at the same time, not enough around him. If they had Jaden Ivey, I think we're having a different discussion. But it is what it is. The Pistons should be very proud they're gone in five games.
Yeah. Karl Anthony Towns is a 10-year veteran at this point. So I would hope that he would be prepared for somebody like Stewart, to try to provoke him and would not take, you know, and wouldn't take the bait. Brunson was not moving great after coming back. I mean, that was a badly sprained ankle. So, you know, I am not expecting Brunson to repeat the scoring heroics that he had in last year's playoffs, but this team is constructed that he doesn't have to do that. Anunoby has been playing his best basketball of his career.
Yes.
In the tail end of this season, and his defense has not fallen off. He is
right.
The Knicks two-way player, and in a way, kind of like their unsung hero of the you know of the season, playing with those two, you know, the two bigger names. Yeah, tough series. I, as you said, I think that the Knicks top end talent should ultimately carry them through and hopefully kind of give them some seasoning and toughening for the Celtics in the second round.
Well, the fear, though, of course, is like last year, the Knicks will impress in the first round, but because of the lack of depth, it will take a toll, and then we won't get the full team in the second round. I would love stacked Knicks against these Celtics. The history says we won't get it, and Tibbs will get some serious crap for it, but I hope I'm wrong. I really do. I love this Knicks team, and I want to see them go far. Bridges worries me, though. The dude's a turnstile on defense. It's just an embarrassment.
Weird.
Yeah. And also, we got to give a shout-out to the person who had the second-greatest three-point shooting season in history, or maybe the third in history this year, and that's Malik Beasley, who nobody's talking about as sixth man of the year. Hit over 300 threes this year. You know, that list is so short. It's like it's Clay did it once, Anthony Edwards did it this year, Malik Beasley, and then Steph's done it six times. But that's the whole list. So I think them having somebody living in Malik Beasley's shorts, as disturbing as that might sound, I think is what they have to do, because he actually can shoot you to a victory. I don't know what happened to him, but he's that good right now.
Oh, he had the ball in his hands frequently in fourth quarters for them and delivered. So
yes.
You're absolutely right. Beasley is going to be a featured player for the Pistons, and hopefully the Knicks perimeter defenders can recognize that.
Absolutely. And Bridges has to fucking finally get his shit together and slow Cade down. Cade was like basically a 30-10-10 guy against the Knicks this year. I think he's going to have a great playoffs. He can't be 30-10-10. The Knicks will not win in five games if he's 30-10-10. It's the second 10 I'm most worried about. Let him score his points, but you don't want him getting other people involved. All right, I have zero interest in Celtics Magic or Cavaliers versus 8. Do you want to say anything about any of that? Unless you're a big Cole Anthony fan, I don't quite see anything too interesting here.
I'm not a big Cole Anthony fan, but yeah,
an admirer.
Yeah, admirer from afar. No, right now Cole seems to be the Magic's third best player, and that kind of says it all. I have the Celtics sweeping Orlando.
Me too.
The only thing I'll say is about the Cavaliers series is, I think the Heat are going to win in Atlanta tonight, and I was kind of sneaky high on the Heat all year, and they never delivered.
Mm-hmm.
I liked what they possibly could have had at the beginning of the year, and they were never on track. And then once they finally unloaded Butler and brought in Wiggins, I said, oh, you know what? I think they're really going to make a run and grab that sixth seed. And I think right after I said that, they went on a 10-game losing streak. So Miami has just not been good, but they kind of look good now. So I see Miami playing Cleveland, and even in a five-game loss, I see the Heat playing the Cavs tougher in the first round than any of their other potential first-round opponents could. I hope it's Miami, and I think that that they could give Cleveland a little bit of a test.
Well, it'll be Miami. I just don't see them having enough offense to.
No, they don't. They don't. You know, but
the Heat can't play the Bulls every game. Like the parade of Tyler Hero layups got a little hard to watch after a while. Not fun. Udonis Haslem could have scored 20 on that Bulls team on Vooch. Just a guy who needs to retire. Okay. Let's go to the I said it. Boom, the hot take. Let me tell you something. Second round, let's go to the I think this one has three incredible series and one series I don't care about. Let's literally just get we've already talked about the Thunder. I have zero respect for the Mavs right now. I have some respect for the Grizz, but if Ja especially is a tad hurt on that ankle, it's just I don't see a world where either the Mavs or the Grizz with their coach, who, you know, looks like he should be selling IKEA furniture. Sorry, I'm just making Swedish jokes. I don't, even though he might be Finnish or Danish. I don't know, man. I just don't care. Thunder win.
Yeah, I was hoping it would be the Kings, actually. And then they lost by 25 at home to a terrible Mavs and demoralized Mavs.
Najee Marshall at the point.
And then I became demoralized. And it wouldn't have mattered. I just like the Kings players more, but they would have been dispatched by Oklahoma. I really do hope it's Memphis, and I know that Ja is hobbled, as he always is, but he's freshly hobbled. If he weren't, I could see the Grizz winning two games.
Mm.
Just because they're very, very deep with good players.
They are deep.
And have a few players that can kind of score on any defensive scheme.
Mm.
Regardless, Thunder are going to win the series. And then the Grizzlies interim coach can return to Norway and work at IKEA.
Excellent. We only hope that for him. I do like the meatballs they have at IKEA. It always gets me there. All right, let's go to the series I'm most excited about. And it's so funny. Like, this is the difference between the conferences. 2 versus 7, Celtics Magic. I didn't even want to talk about it. I might not watch much of it, frankly. 2 versus 7 in the West is the series I'm actually the most excited about. Rockets versus Warriors. Now, so many subplots here, Shiraz. I'll go first with this one, and I'll give you second with the next one. Like, I love these because you got the Rockets, the totally unexpected 2 seed, Ime Udoka talking crap to Steph Curry, utterly fearless in these situations. The Rockets have defenders to make Curry and Jimmy's life really hard. When you saw the way that they beat the Grizzlies in a very close game, Curry and Jimmy combined for 75 points. And I don't see who their third scorer is on this team. And I feel like having a third scorer in the playoffs is really important. Kuminga could be that third scorer. They have him buried on the bench. He's benched. Who's the third scorer? And, you know, and are you really asking Steph, we know, can deliver every game. Do we really think Jimmy Butler, even playoff Jimmy, is going to drop 30 a game in this series? Meanwhile, you've got the Rockets, and we talked about breakout stars beforehand. This team is filled with people who potentially could be breakout stars in this series. Shangoon, Amen Thompson. Just, I mean, and these guys are great. Even Jalen Green could go off in this series. It wouldn't shock me. He had some great stretches this year. He can always get his own shot. And then Shiraz, if Houston starts and if they play this new big lineup, I don't know if you've been seeing this, but Şengün and Steven Adams, it's like they made frickin' Zach Edey look like Wilt Chamberlain in the Memphis Golden State game. And so if Zach Edey is grabbing 16 rebounds, what does Şengün and Adams grab? I mean, my God. You know, so I like the Rockets in 7 here, even though they have no playoff experience to speak of. They do have Fred VanVleet. They do have Dylan Brooks. They do have Steven Adams. They have enough of a veteran presence, I feel like, to withstand the Warriors' pedigree. And frankly, when we talk about the Warriors' pedigree, who are we really talking about? I mean, there's so much talk. You're talking about Kerr, you're talking about Curry, you're talking about Draymond, and you're talking about Jimmy, who did it with a different team. It's an impressive group. I get why people are picking the Warriors. I like the Rockets in seven.
Yeah, funky series. I mean, as you know, as the West is, you know, when you're that bunched, and seeding just literally comes down to season series and other kind of deciding factors. I love that because it means the, you know, it means the regular season was very, very kind of hotly competitive. But also then it's kind of, you know, who do you wind up seeing, and that can, who you draw, you know, can change a team losing in the first round or making a run to the conference finals. And yeah, I think that this is a good matchup for the Rockets, actually. And even as you were saying it, as you were going through it, everything you were saying to me worked in the Rockets' favor. Because I'm not sure how I feel about this series, actually. And I'm glad you pointed out that even if Houston's three leading scorers are young and haven't played in any playoff games necessarily. No, I mean, right, they have that veteran component who are on-court contributors, not just the Udonis Haslem Sage role.
Exactly.
And Ime Udoka, his year as a head coach, he went to the finals. So this is not such a greenhorn squad. And as I said, I think that they drew a good matchup with Golden State. Golden State is a mini team in general. Mm-hmm. And I think that being as reliant on a single player as Golden State ultimately is, Houston has a lot of defenders to throw at Curry and bother Curry and be fit and make life on offense difficult for Curry, make it harder for him to get his shots and force him to miss a lot of shots to put up the scoring numbers he's going to have. So even though I do not like the Rockets as a threat to win the West, I see no way that they come out of the conference. Again, I think that this is an advantageous matchup for them. I think right now the player on the Warriors best positioned to be that third scorer is Pajermski.
Yeah.
He hasn't proven that he's up to it.
Yeah.
When things are going well, he looks like he's up to it.
Yeah.
And then he can have games where he's a curiously kind of a non-factor in things. So that's why he's a wild card. I either have the Rockets winning. I could see the Rockets winning in 5, 6, or 7. I could actually see this just being a befuddling matchup for Golden State that they don't unlock.
Oh,
actually,
wow.
That it just like the Thunder's size, depth, youth, and defense is just too much for Curry and Jimmy to overcome without the necessary help.
Wow.
Or it could come down to the last possession of the seventh game.
I mean, that's more where I see it. And what I'm impressed with, frankly, is Fred VanVleet's ability to just chill everybody out and get the best possible shot. That, to me, is an unspoken advantage that they have veteran point guard help. I mean, and also, Tari Eason crashing the boards. I mean, I can't mention Amen Thompson enough. I mean, there's a reason why Curry struggled so much against the Rockets this year is they can just keep throwing bodies at him over and over again. And Udoka could just be like, be a pit bull for 6 minutes, then you're going to rest. And you could just rotate some guy through. Cam Whitmore, I mean, you could just throw people at Curry. I just think people are deeply, I mean, Warriors are favored in this series. And I just think that's wrong.
I think right after the All-Star break, Houston dipped. I think they went on kind of like their first little losing streak of the season. And I was thinking, now they're kind of falling back to earth. I bet they fall. Wouldn't surprise me if they hosted a play-in game. And instead, they reacted to that by solidifying number two.
Mm-hmm.
Out of this packed West of good teams with great players, Houston finished second and locked that shit up with like 2 weeks to go or something. So the Rockets kind of earned over 82 games where they're at. And if the Warriors are favored, I think that's going to wind up being wrong.
Yeah. Wow. So I was actually surprised we're in agreement on that. I do not see two guys over the age of 35 dropping 38 points each every single game. And I'm not sure how they win without doing something like that. Now, as someone pointed out to me, that's very smart. Well, they don't really have to do it every game. They just have to do it four times in seven games, which is a good point. You know, if they can psych it up for 4 and 7 with those long breaks, that to me is the only way the Warriors win. To me, I'm a Kerr guy, both politically and as a coach. Not playing Kuminga, to me, not finding a role for him, is just wacky to me. It was wacky against the Clips. It was wacky against the Grizzlies. It'll be wacky because you need athletes to throw at the Rockets. Kuminga's their best athlete. It's just weird to me. And Kuminga could drop 20 points and you wouldn't be like, wow. You'd be like, oh, Kuminga dropped 20 points. And they don't have Clay. They don't have the third guy who can do it. And that makes me really nervous. I think you need three dudes to move on. Not like some freaking, you know, like big three, but you just need three dudes who can put the ball in the hoop, at least. Speaking of which, and I'll let you start with this, the Lakers, who certainly have three dudes, going against the Timberwolves. Very interesting contrast in teams, very interesting contrast in styles. I know a lot of people who said, wow, I had the Timberwolves going deep until I saw they were matched to the Lakers. I throw it to you, Shiraz. Lakers, T-Wolves, who do you like?
Yeah, if Houston was happy to draw the Warriors, I don't think the Lakers were happy to draw the Timberwolves.
Agreed.
Could have gone in a lot of different ways. And I agree with whoever you were just talking about. If Minnesota wasn't playing the Lakers in the first round, I might have them to win at least one round and possibly two, because I think they possibly could have the team to be surging at the right time, which is now. But that being said, tough matchup for the Lakers, because I think their known weakest point is in the middle. And not every team can exploit that. Golden State would not have been able to exploit that. Minnesota has a unique three-man front court, which who all bring essential and completely different contributions and skill sets, and any combination can play together and do down the stretch. So with Gobert, Randall, and Naz Reid, Minnesota is positioned to be able to exploit the Lakers' weakness in the middle, where their closing lineup relies on Rui Hachimura, who's about 6'8 or so, in the middle. So that should be a very, very interesting kind of contrast. That being said, the Wolves, much like every other team in the league, is going to struggle to try to constrain those three great scorers on the Lakers, because Jaden McDaniels can only guard one of them. And when he guarded Luka in the conference finals last year, Luka was the dominant player in every single game in the series. So Yeah, this to me is the primetime series. This is kind of like one of the knockout series. There's another series in the West, which I think is going to be super competitive and up in the air. But this should be a really, really tough one. I think the Lakers are going to win. I have the Lakers playing well in the playoffs. I think they're going to win. And much like the last series, I'm going to say Lakers in six. I'm going to say the Lakers win a really, really tough six game at the Target Center to close it out 4-2.
You know what? I'm with you 1,000%. I mean, I thought we'd disagree more, but let's be clear about this. For the team.
Sorry, Dave. I know like podcast chemistry is usually built on disagreement.
On disagreement, but you also know when it's you and me, we don't do fake disagreement. We only do it when it's real. And in this case, while I certainly could do a fake disagreement and say all sorts of things like the size up front by the Wolves is just profoundly greater than that by the Lakers, who have Jackson Hayes followed by Rui, or even followed by LeBron at the center position, age 40. I could poke holes in, you know, Luka being in shape, LeBron being over 40, as opposed to Anthony Edwards, who's just as like in his prime as now, not only one of the most electrifying players, but one of the best three-point shooters in the NBA. I did not see that coming. You know, double digits attempts per game and shooting 40% is just bonkers. And even doing a step back three. I could point to all of that stuff and make the positive case for the T-Wolves. And even some of the players like Jaden McDaniels that they can throw. Where I see the difference, and we spoke about this the other day, is that defensively the T-Wolves actually do have answers to slow down Luka and LeBron. They do not have an answer for Austin Reeves. Who's guarding Austin Reeves? Mike Conley? DiVincenzo, I guess, but I actually don't think Dante is in the class to actually slow Austin Reeves. He's been that damn good this year. And you don't see DiVincenzo playing 40 minutes a game. I mean, Chris Finch is no Tibbs. So Conley will get his minutes, and I think he's going to get cooked. So that's why I lean Lakers. Yeah, they're small. Yeah, Gobert, I mean, is an interesting player in this series. He'll either get played off the court or make a significant contribution on the back line. He's somebody who's a real X factor to me. But honestly, the Lakers, I just, the Luka LeBron ability to dissect another team is something that I don't think the Timberwolves are going to be able to withstand.
I don't think Anthony Edwards is positioned to be stopping one of whoever he's assigned to. And especially if Edwards is looked at to play 42 minutes a game and put up double digits, three pointers and make 40% of those.
I'm thinking
asking him to guard, who's he's going to be assigned to? Luka?
No. I see Edwards being hiding and them looking more at like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's cousin.
Oh, okay.
What's his name? Alexander
Nikhil.
Alexander?
Nikhil. Nikhil Alexander Walker. Okay, right. Then you're looking at taking a starter off the floor.
Yeah, and I'm looking at hiding
lineup,
Edwards.
You have McDaniels, and then after that, you have the rest of their – right. As formidable as Minnesota's size is, that is interior defensively. Julius Randle, you know, ain't guarding Austin Reeves out on the floor. So that's why it's going to be a very, very interesting style, a contrast in style and size. But I think it's the unmatched trio that the Lakers have on the perimeter that Minnesota is not going to be able to contend with that.
Very interesting stuff there. Yeah. I can't see a Luka LeBron combo just being knocked out in the first round. I think they'll figure out a way. And as we've discussed, Austin Reeves being like a guy is something that's been a development that I certainly did not see coming. at all. I was like, will he lose time to connect? That was a misdiagnosis.
I am so impressed by that guy.
Fun to watch, too.
There were several games in the second half of the season where Doncic and James were on the floor and having good games. And the go-to guy in the fourth was Austin Reeves. Not just because so much defensive attention was on the other guys, but because you put the ball in his hands and he scores.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, he kind of does it all on offense.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're playing next to those two other guys, having a guy that kind of does it all on offense, I don't know, you can win a championship with that.
Yeah, and what do you call it again? Like if somebody's in isolation because they have a disease of some kind, a communicable disease?
Quarantine,
thank you. I think you can effectively quarantine Anthony Edwards. So it's like, hey, guess what? Look who's scoring 40 points a game and they lost in five. Like, because I don't think Edwards is yet, you look, his assist numbers are down. What was a great year without Cat? His assist numbers were actually down when I know they wanted him to be more of a playmaker. So you wonder about the, and this is a weird phrase, but the on-court maturity in him thinking to himself, I need to make sure that Naz Reid is scoring 18 points a game. And that being like a focus for him and not like the, I need to be the best player in this series, which of course is what I said at the start of this. But to me, him being the best player in the series does mean averaging like 7 assists a game, which is not impossible for him to do. Obviously, he's got the skill set to do whatever the hell he wants. But yeah, Lakers in 6 for me. I like the target center win. So I'm agreeing with you down the line on that.
I think Julius needs to be a big, not just X factor, but factor. Multi-time All-Star.
All-NBA. 2-time
And that's
All-NBA.
Gotten lost in him being part of that 3-headed Minnesota rotation big. But no, Randall has the ability to be that legitimate second scorer. As you were talking about the kind of one-man mentality of Edwards and possibly averaging 40 points in a 5-game series loss. No, your second leading scorer is a guy who has been a leading scorer on teams that have won games. And he's much more equipped to be the second leading scorer, but potentially the second leading scorer on a team that wins a lot of games and wins some playoff rounds. So if Randall is a legitimate number two, with his offensive game blending with Edwards, then that could really work in Minnesota's favor and give them more wins.
Mm. All right, the last game, and with this one that I want to talk about, because, again, to me, the West is so full. I just named two series that I couldn't be more excited to see, and now we have the one I'm the most excited to see, because within it lies a team that I think is actually going to be the team to beat OKC and go to the finals. I'm not going to say what that team is. Woo! But I'll throw it to you, Shiraz, to go first. Nuggets, Clips, who you like?
Oh, I don't even know. I mean, this, I like everybody. I like nobody. this should be a really great one because the Nugs, both teams find themselves at unusual. It's unusual how they both got here. And hopefully it will result in delight. Perhaps 7 games of delight.
Rockets in sight.
The Nugs, I mean, they have the guy. We've talked about great players over the last hour. This is the greatest of them all. So the Nuggets have that. And so there's always, I mean, they have the guy that you can ride to win playoff series. And to say, okay, we have him and he's feeling good, so we are going to win this game. And if you keep winning those games, you win series and then you just keep winning. So then again, I'm angry at the Nuggets because they fired a championship-winning coach. three games before the playoffs started. And the little that I've read about it, it's like, oh, maybe they should have fired him because nobody was happy.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. I mean, but, you know, much like Memphis, you know, kind of a team finds itself entering the most important part of the year without a head coach that has been looked at as the architect of whatever success they've had. And then you find out that there was trouble in paradise. So how Denver, so, and again, it was, there was only a few games left. So we haven't even seen how Denver reacts to that, change. David Adelman. So, and then you have the Clips, who I had them at the bottom of the conference this year. They were good the entire year. Ty Lue, probably his best job ever, should also be in the Coach of the Year conversation.
Great coach.
And they're playing great. They beat the Warriors in an overtime road thriller to grab five instead of being in the play-in. And so I don't know how I feel about this. And I know that this is kind of like cheating, but I kind of feel like whoever wins this series is going to beat the Thunder.
Wow.
But I don't know who that's going to be or how it is going to play out. And so I don't know. I think I'm going to pick Nuggets in seven.
See, I actually feel, I hear your vacillation. I actually feel very strongly about this. I think Clippers in five. Five, I say. Because after Jokic, I'm really not seeing it. Of course, Jokic will have a great five games. He's one of the great playoff performers statistically in history. But Jamal Murray, injured at the end of the year. Michael Porter, a disappearing act in the playoffs, and not even related to Michael Freak Porter of the old St. John's backcourt, which I've always resented him for. Aaron Gordon, I'm not trusting him to like score 25 a game in the playoffs. Christian Brown, you know, Russ, I look at that, and then no depth off the bench. And I look at that, and then I look at a team where Kawhi Leonard, the only person in history to have won two NBA finals. No, not the only person. LeBron did it too. I apologize. But one of two people in history to win finals MVPs with two different teams. It's Kawhi and LeBron. That's the list. And even though Jordan tried with the Wizards, never made the playoffs. Yeah, missed it by that much. Not making the playoffs. Oh my God. I see that not just Kawhi, but I see Kawhi unlocking James Harden, who's playing amazingly in the playoffs. Norm Powell, just amazing, 20 a game. But then you have the guy I think is the reason why the Clippers are going to win, and that's the most improved player in the NBA, Ivica Zubats. The great thing about Zubats is that This is an amazing stat that I saw. Jokic is the number one player in the NBA in terms of taking passes in the post. His number against Zubats is by a country mile, I'll just say against the Clippers, is by a country mile his lowest in the NBA as far as taking passes in the post. He doesn't want it in the post against his Balkan brother. So now you're putting it on Jokic's, you know, outside the paint, amazing shooting and passing. So again, Jokic is going to have a huge series, but from a different angle. It takes away his offensive rebounding, and then you're in a situation where who is Jokic throwing to? And I'm not impressed with the answer to that question. I am impressed with the idea of Chris Dunn guarding Jamal Murray. That impresses me. Chris Dunn has been all defense this year. I'm impressed with Nicholas Batum coming back to back up Zubats when he needs it, even at center, which Batum has shown he can do. And then you don't have to play Ben Simmons. Good God. But I like what the Clippers are bringing to the table. I haven't even mentioned all their weapons, but there's one more that I do want to mention. I didn't mention getting Bogdan. But here's one I do want to mention. I really want to mention this. These games will be close. Denver's too good for them not to be close. It then becomes for me, who do you trust at the end of close games? Do you trust Ty Lue, who, as you said, is also considered one of the great in-game strategists in the NBA? And he's got Van Gundy by his side, so underrated. Jeff Van Gundy, who's like the defensive coordinator. He's in charge of a defense. Derek Jones Jr., I forgot to mention. Throw his ass out on Aaron Gordon or Michael Porter. See how much fun they have. And then we go to this, like, Rick Adelman's son, who's coaching the Nuggets. Apparently they like him. What's he going to do with 2 minutes left in the game? Needs to come up with some schemes. Ty Lue is proven in that world. Adelman is not. Clippers in five.
Everything you've just said sounds very, very compelling. There's nothing to, there's nothing that I heard that I would disagree with. And as I said, I there's no certainty to me in this series, which is what I think, why it has so many delicious possibilities. If the Clippers are kind of the unique team to be able to push Jokic off one of his most preferred operating spots and force him to operate from different places on the floor for more of the game, that could be a huge factor and could kind of solidify a Clippers series win. You talked about having faith in the Clippers down the stretch. I guess for me, in any close game, having Jokic on the floor, it makes sense to kind of ride with him. Even though in his last playoff series they lost, so that is, he doesn't have all the
answers. In seven games.
And even furthermore, to the Clippers' credit, is I don't even know that Kawhi necessarily unlocked Harden, because Harden was fantastic all year. I was dismissive of the Clippers at the beginning of the year. Totally dismissive, because Kawhi was out indefinitely from the start and wound up missing, the first 35 games of the year. So I was out for a while. So I was like, what, the ball's going to be in James Harden's hands for the first couple of months?
Yeah, good luck. Look great.
And it wasn't. He was great. He was James Harden. He's him. He's him. He's an amazing player. And Powell has had a career year, as you said, at like age 30. And now Kawhi's back. And when he plays, he looks great. So...
I got a caveat, of course. Like, Kawhi doesn't make it through the series. He's looked so good. He's been playing. He played 43 minutes in that game against Golden State. Kawhi gets hurt. All bets are off. You're totally right about Harden. He should be all NBA this year. So now I'll just transition straight up because we're running low on time. Cavs Clips. That's my finals. Cavs Clips. Clips, because I really do think if Kawhi's healthy, they've got the stuff to go all the way. OKC, still too green for me. A seven-game series, give me Kawhi and that depth, and Zubats, who I think is a more than enough of an answer for Chet, who he's going to put in the rim, and even Hartenstein. And then let's go to the East. I can't lie to you, man. It's more just that I'm congenitally unable to say that the Celtics are going to come out of there. So I'm going Cavs, just because I don't want to pick the Celtics. There's my analysis. So Cavs versus the Clips in the finals.
You have Cleveland, LA in the finals, and so do I, but a different Los Angeles.
Oh, plot twist.
I'm picking the Cavaliers not just because I stubbornly don't want to pick the Celtics.
That's me.
But because I think the Cavaliers are the best team in the East. And they've been the best team in the East from the very first game of the season. And when they've played the Celtics, Cleveland to me has looked like the better team. So I have Cavs, Lakers in the finals.
You know what? Me gusta. I love that. All right, one last thing on the show. I've been really excited to talk to you about this. It was something I threw out to you that I wanted to ask you. And that's I did get this from another pod. I don't give a shit. I'm sure they've stolen from me. Actually, they have stolen from me. So I don't even want to name them. But so whatever.
You steal from
just steal from me. I steal from you. That was Pacino. So it's not really racist because he was the one being racist. Pacino pretending to be Cuban. I was doing that, not Puerto Rican in Carlito's way.
I don't forgive either of you.
Hey, it's Benny Blanco from the Bronx. It's like, we know Benny Blanco. Jesus. Hey, it's Benny Blanco from Yonkers. It doesn't have the same ring. All right, putting it right to you. Who is going to be the breakout star of this playoff season? There always are a couple. Who's going to be the one of one? The person who we're like, whoa, that is the guy who just leveled up the basketball world's opinion of him because of how we played. Now, there's some players, as we've talked about at the start of the show, who simply can't level up, who are the equivalent of mafia-made guys. I'll put three people in that category only, maybe four, but I'm going to go, other than Curry, Tatum, and LeBron, really anybody has the chance to me. And you know what? Yeah. Kawhi is a tough one because he's a made guy, but if he does it after being injured, that's the story of the entire season. But really, it's wide open for somebody to like level up in everybody's mind as an all-time player. Maybe it's a role player who we now look at as a future building block, like a, say, a Tari Eason or somebody who goes nuts, a Jalen Green. Or maybe it's a player who's an all-star who we now look at as a top five or six player, like we did last year, I think, with Brunson after the playoffs. What about this year, Shiraz? Who's your breakout performer, the person we're going to say, that guy leveled the hell up?
Well, I've just predicted a lengthy playoff run for the Cavaliers, possibly ending with the championship. I don't know how I feel about who's going to win the finals yet. But along with that, of course, you know, when anybody thinks of the Cavs, they usually think of four guys. Right up front, they think of the all-star backcourt, and then they think of those two big guys up front. All of them have been all-stars. Three of them were this year. To me, the breakout performer for the Cavs and in this year's postseason is going to be the player who propels them past Boston in what will assuredly be a tough conference finals if the two of them do meet as expected. And that's DeAndre Hunter. I thought he was an underrated addition at the deadline. The entire basketball and sports world was still in the Luka trauma. So almost every other move, we were almost desensitized to that. But I thought the Hunter move was kind of fabulous for the Cavs. He's a player I've always liked, who I haven't thought was properly utilized in Atlanta. And at the times when he was featured, I thought he produced and kind of reinforced what I always have liked about his game. He's an incredibly adaptable player. Very versatile defensively, can guard multi positions, can fit in a motion offense, can be a spot up shooter, but can also be a go-to player. And it's in that area, I think, with so much defensive attention focused in crunch time on Mitchell and Garland, I think there's going to be times throughout the playoffs where Hunter is called upon to make big shots. I think he's going to do it throughout, and I think that they're going, and I think that's going to propel them to the championship. Round.
Awesome. But for folks, I was saying, Shiraz, for you to say more because my dog started to bark. That's why I was making that motion. I was like, talk more till my dog stops barking. But whatever. Sadie stopped barking. So we're good. You know, it's so, that was a great call. Like, because that's somebody who people don't really talk about that much. The trade, you know, certainly got remarked upon. But if Hunter has a great run, people will be like, whoa, this guy. Somebody who I think is the guy, somebody a little more established than Hunter, a little bit more known. But as I think about him, I feel like he's so lauded in like media circles and podcast circles. But then I ask myself, does like the casual NBA fan, are they actually up on the person who to me is the greatest athlete in the NBA? Are they up on Amen Thompson with the Houston Rockets? His ability to be a defensive terror, his ability to dunk on anybody, his ability to rebound, which is unreal. His ability to basically take a starting place in that lineup and be unbenchable on a team that's so stacked with players. I mean, I think Amen Thompson, they win that first round. Everybody's talking about Amen Thompson for what he did to Curry in that first round. Amen Thompson keeps pushing through the playoffs. And when it's over, people are like, damn, Amen Thompson, that's a guy. Now, if you're talking about in the finals, I think another guy who is very lauded in podcast circles and super fan circles, he'll be on all NBA defense this year, but somebody who just isn't discussed by the casuals fans is Ivica Zubac. I mean, if they beat Jokic, it'll be because of Zubac. And I think he could be a real story going through these playoffs. Like, whoa, who is this guy? And where did he come from? And how did he get so good? So those are my two big breakout candidates, are Ivica and Amen Thompson. I was going to say Evan Mobley, but I'm not sure that he qualifies at this point. Even for the casual fan, I think he just may be too big for this category.
I disagree with that. I think that Mobley, he's absolutely primed as a breakout candidate. You know, when you're known as, when you're the third best player on a good team, who just made his first All-Star appearance and is still looked at as a guy with potential that has not flourished on a consistent basis, that's the making of a breakout performer. Mm-hmm. If Mobley, throughout a long playoff run, shows that he's the player when it matters the most that everybody thinks he could or should be, then I think Mobley is absolutely primed to occupy that role. And I like your
Hunter.
I like your selections of Zubac and Thompson as well. I think they're essential players on teams that are hoping to win more than one round.
Exactly. And you and I both talked off air about Austin Reeves and certainly him being primed to be that person as well. He's another one, and I know you disagree with me, who I think at this point is too big to be seen as like a true, I know I said at the beginning, unless you're Curry or LeBron or maybe Kawhi, there's no such thing as a break, or Tatum, there's no such thing.
Yeah, I didn't quite understand
Brown,
that.
Or Jaylen Brown, there's no such thing as really a breakout star.
If Luka shows himself to be the best player in the playoffs, I don't think that's going to be surprising to anybody.
No, but it would be a huge deal. Like, okay, Luka's a championship player, not just someone who takes a team to the finals, but the best player on a finals team.
I see what you mean.
He levels up then. It's okay. Like, who has the capacity to really level up?
Sure.
And I guess you're right. Austin Reeves could. I just feel like he's leveled up so much this year. It's like, where's the next level for this guy?
Doing just it in the playoffs.
Touche.
That's the next level. That's what makes, yeah. He's overachieved in the regular season. He's a really good player now. Doing it in the playoffs, but absolutely bumps up his profile and where he might take his career.
Last question, Shiraz. What is the series that you will cancel other plans to not miss?
There's two of them in the West. I mean, you know, it depends what kind of plans we're talking about. But I really want to see as much of Lakers, Wolves, and Nuggets clips as I can. I'm fascinated by those two series. I kind of like all four teams involved for different reasons, and I could make a case for why all four of those teams could go far. So those are the two kind of prime time series for me. What about you?
I also got Rockets Warriors on that. So I'm actually three that I'm canceling plans for. I guess they'll all be 9:30 and 10:30 games. So I better, stock up on the English breakfast tea for the following morning. But that's because it's caffeinated. But, you know, I think three of the four Western series to me could not be more delectable.
Yeah, I'm just saying, you know, if somebody wants to take me out to a really nice meal and the place doesn't have a TV, then, you know, I might accept that invitation.
What about like a Hunan Kitchen kind of place where the other person has the credit card?
Yeah, that qualifies.
Okay. Trip to Tower Records, maybe, for tapes.
I don't have a cassette player anymore, Dave.
I know. Me neither. Breaks my heart. I found a bunch of cassettes recently. It was just sad. Like, oh, I love this album. Oh, I'm never going to be able to play it. Well.
Glad you ended on that note.
Yes.
Glad nobody's listening anymore.
Let me tell you something. If the Knicks go all the way, I want all the props because I didn't pick them, but I don't know. I just love them.
If the Knicks go all the way, we're going to find a way to play all of those cassettes.
If the Knicks go all the way, you and I are going to hang out outside the Garden before a game to vibe it and then just go to a nearby bar and watch it with the full vibe.
I love that plan.
Isn't that a great idea?
So that really works for me.
Yeah, you just have to take a subway. So you're like, good plan, Dave.
I'll be there.
Well, thank you so much, Arya Shirazi. This was a great time. As always, a classic show, I think, is going to go down as. Thank you to The Nation Magazine for sponsoring our wacky pod. Thank you so much to David Tigaboo, the producer of this pod. For everybody out there listening, please stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace.